Do you know the story? The one mentioned earlier in the reading. The one about Danish King Christian during World War II, boldly wearing an armband with a Star of David, a sign of solidarity when the Jews of his country were ordered by the Nazis to so identify themselves in public. If you know the story, you may also know that it is a legend. King Christian didn't actually don an armband, and for that matter, the Nazis never went so far in Denmark as to require that Jews wear them either. But the truth is that the Danish people, led by their king, did actively resist cooperating with the Nazis during the war, leaving the occupying authorities confounded at every turn. Though the story of the armband isn't technically true, it speaks to the powerful truth at the heart of the Danish resistance. In his lecture here this afternoon on this movement, Dr. Wagner will surely share more light on this, so I hope you'll plan to attend. But what I want you to know for now is that that story inspired an entire Montana community to take action in 1993. For months, the Ku Klux Klan had been sowing seeds of hate in the city of Billings. Racist flyers were plastered onto car windshields during a celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday. Tombstones in the Jewish cemetery were vandalized and upturned. The home of Native woman Dawn Fast Horses was covered with spray-painted swastikas and graffiti. The community, duly horrified, turned out for candlelight vigils. 30 people showed up with cans of paint to cover over the hate. But things in Billings only continued to escalate. In December, not long after 6-year-old Isaac Schnitzer helped his parents put up a paper menorah in his bedroom window for Hanukkah, a chunk of cinder block shattered their celebrations and his window. Though Isaac wasn't physically hurt, his parents felt the terrible sting of having to explain that there were people in the surrounding community who hated them because of who they are. Rather than quietly ignoring or minimizing what had happened, Isaac's parents turned to the Billings Gazette and asked them to run news of the attack on its front page. The paper did not only that, but included a large image of a menorah as well. And in an editorial telling the legend of King Christian and the armbands, the editors urged the people of Billings to cut up and to put up those ancient Jewish symbols in their own windows as a sign of support for the groups being targeted with intolerance. Overnight, menorahs sprang up everywhere. In short order, there were more than 10,000 paper menorahs in the windows of homes and businesses throughout the city. Suddenly, this quiet and relatively homogeneous city on the high plains had what seemed a very large Jewish population. While a powerful message had been sent to the Klan, putting up the menorahs involved a very real measure of risk, as acts of vandalism and harassment continued on for some time. Still, the people of Billings had taken action. They had chosen to stand on the side of love and eventually learned that love wins. Along the way, they also discovered the strength of standing in solidarity. What they thought was a simple show of support for the victims of violence turned into a larger lesson about the transformative power of a community coming together. Sadly, this is a lesson that our world seems to need to learn over and over again. It is a lesson that we try to learn regularly in this religious community, this marvelous little laboratory of the human spirit, where the goal of not mere tolerance, but deeper understanding is at the core of our spiritual practice. As I am fond of saying, we are each other's spiritual work. Our differences and our efforts to transcend them are the stuff from which genuine spiritual growth springs. Now, to be sure, this isn't the easiest of paths, and it certainly is not the easiest of paths to walk together. But walk we do even when we stumble, even when we fall. Indeed, the question that I am most commonly asked by clergy from other religious traditions is just how I manage to hold a congregation like this together. As if. As if I could somehow manage to keep this congregation together all by myself. I am quick to point out to these curious interfaith colleagues that things don't quite work like that around here, that the congregation pretty much holds itself together, and that my central task is not enforcing doctrine, but rather calling people to live committed and courageous lives of integrity. More often than not, other clergy have a very hard time comprehending a faith without a set of specific beliefs. And so their next question is almost always, how on earth do you preach to a room full of atheists and agnostics, Buddhists and Christians, Jews and pagans? Very carefully, I say. And then I share the truth that it's not as hard as it might seem. I explain that ours is a covenantal faith, not a creedal religion, that we find sharing a set of common values far more important than holding some set of shared beliefs, and that we as Unitarians are ultimately united in a covenant that speaks to how we aspire to be in this world, that we seek to be led in all things by love, ever questing after truth beyond our grasp and giving generously of ourselves to the service of life itself, all in the fragile but blessed hope that all the world might one day dwell in peace. Now, let me say that to ask what holds us together is a fair question. I know that it is one that some of us ask ourselves around here from time to time. But putting undue focus on the question of belief is to risk missing the point of this religion, that what we do with our beliefs is far more important than any belief itself. Religious scholar Karen Armstrong, in her TED Talk on the Charter for Compassion, speaks to her own evolving understanding about the concept of belief. I found some astonishing things, she says, in the course of my study that had never occurred to me. Frankly, in the days when I thought I had had it with religion, I just found the whole thing absolutely incredible. These doctrines seemed unproven and abstract, but to my astonishment, when I began seriously studying other traditions, I began to realize that belief, which we make such a fuss about today, is only a very recent religious enthusiasm. It surfaced only in the West in about the 17th century. The word belief itself originally meant to love, to prize, to hold dear. In the 17th century, it narrowed its focus to mean an intellectual assent to a set of propositions, a credo. I believe did not mean I accept certain articles of faith. It meant I commit myself, I engage myself. So if religion is not about believing things, she asks, what is it about? What I have found, she reports, is that across the board, religion is about behaving differently. Instead of deciding whether or not you believe in God, first you do something, you behave in a committed way, and then you begin to understand the truths of a religion. Religious doctrines are meant to be summons to action. You only understand them when you put them into practice. Practice what you preach, as the old saying goes. That's essentially what our own William Ellery Channing once advised a newly minted minister in the 19th century when he said, "May your life preach more loudly than your lips." Or as Bill Gardner so clearly puts it, we all have two religions. The religion we talk about and the religion we live. Our task is to make the difference between the two as small as possible. And so we must ask ourselves, does the practice of our religion, my religion and your religion, make us kinder and more compassionate? Does it build the common good on this planet and make our own days glad? Does it ennoble our lives and transform this world with love? I sincerely hope you find the answer to be yes, or at least yes most days. And on those other days, if you are anything like me, well, you might rightly feel that you have your work cut out for you. You may well find yourself wondering whether the practice of your faith isn't perhaps something you may well need more practice at. Fortunately, each day offers to us another chance to bring our beliefs and our behaviors into closer alignment, to live out a life of increasing integrity as we strive to make our words and our deeds one and the same. That's what I see happening when non-Jewish people in Montana put up menorahs in their windows, and when straight people here put rainbows and pink triangles on their name tags. I see it upstairs each week in coffee hour, and downstairs at the monthly meetings of Amnesty International, where letters are written demanding justice. I see it in the passion of protesters out in St. James Park, and in the commitment of our volunteers at the Regent Park School of Music. I see it when we seek to walk more gently upon this earth, and when we teach our children about their bodies and human sexuality. I see it in countless ways as we struggle and strive to build beloved community on this sacred bit of soil. All of this and more speaks louder than any sermon I could ever give. All of this tells the story of our faith and reveals our true beliefs, and it holds this congregation together. This congregation was founded in 1845 on the principle of free exercise of private judgment in all matters of belief. It was a dramatic idea then, and it is a dramatic idea today. 166 years later, that principle stands firm at the heart of this congregation. What holds us together all these years later is not so much a set of shared beliefs, but the shared dreams we have for ourselves and our world, a vision of lives lived with compassion, commitment, and courage. And yet, maybe we do hold more shared beliefs than we imagine. As Karen Armstrong explained, belief has not always meant some propositional statement to which one assents. The earlier meaning of belief, what I give my heart to, it pointed to what we most deeply cherish and to what we most dearly love. So I ask, what do you believe? To what and to whom do you give your heart? What do you cherish and love with all of your being? May what we believe, what we love above all else, serve always to bring us together rather than divide. May our beliefs cause us to see that what we cherish is much the same. May we believe in each other and in this great meeting house, which holds us all in its embrace. Amen.